gentlemen around the Delaware Valley. Welcome to Merv Haber's Real Estate Power Hour here on WWDB Talk 860, Philadelphia's premier real estate show. Lots to talk about. Get your pens and paper out. Every month we learn so much, some great topics from Philadelphia's premier real estate attorney, Merv Haber. Merv, how are you, sir?
Very well. What I guess genesis this topic of the week was I attended the Philadelphia Bar Association Bench Bar Conference down at the Borgata in Atlantic City this past weekend, and they had a myriad of topics in CLE, continuing legal education, and they brought up one particular topic that interested me, and I took a deep dive into it, and I want to share it with our listeners.
Sure.
In 2008, approximately 16 years ago, Pennsylvania passed what they considered to be a tool in the hope of restoring neglected properties to productive use and increase potential to become valued assets in neighborhood real estate markets. Now, how they did that is through an act, and they did it through the use of a conservatorship. We're gonna talk a little bit about it, but Philadelphia was rated last week as the poorest large city in America, which means pro rata. We have some of the poorest individuals, unfortunately, and some of the most neglected or blighted real estate. And in its scope or in its ideal, conservatorship is helpful because it helps blighted and abandoned properties be restored. Now, some residential blocks are still occupied even though there's incipient blight there. So they did a study, and Philadelphia, as I said, because of their lower real estate and lower income, has blighted properties, dilapidated and vandalized row houses in South Philly all the way through to the border of Cheltenham or Montgomery County, Olney Logan, to the west, and a deteriorated or vacant property, Joe, you know, what is that a symptom of? It's declining or failing real estate. And when no one takes action to improve the condition, that's when we start having real estate fluctuations. In simple terms, nobody wants to reside next to a blighted or burned out property.
Sure.
Addition to that, blighted properties are also havens for drugs.
Crime.
And crime. So the Blighted and Abandoned Property Conservatorship Act of 2008, that's the whole schmear, that's the whole name. Actually, we'll just call it Act 135 Conservatorship, says that local governments can, under this act, a municipality, a nonprofit organization, a school district, or a redevelopment authority can petition a judge in common pleas court to appoint a responsible party to take charge of the neglected property and bring it into compliance with code standards. The party appointed for this purpose, that's the conservator, is given responsibility to stabilize, rehabilitate, or demolish the structure in order to address the blighted conditions, depending on the seriousness, that the owner has been unable or unwilling to take care of. And that's the problem, unable to take care of. So the judge's decision to appoint a conservator is based on hearing evidence that a property owner is unwilling or unable to comply with property codes, L&I, and so forth, right?
Yeah.
If the property is dilapidated, the position is it's a serious threat to the community, and it can be. But the conservatorship process involves legal court-supervised appointments through the courts. And, of course, with everything else, there's always the opportunity for abuse or exaggeration. So because of the judicial information, that's what bothers me. Now, thankfully, Act 35 has a process. And the conservatorship is a team endeavor, okay? And that is what they put some of these safeguards in there. So to prepare a credible case, you're going to need the following: a real estate lawyer who's knowledgeable about Act 135, and you're going to need an architect who has experience in developing or upgrading the property, a project manager, or I guess a general contractor, to serve as the team's primary contact person to keep things moving, and a potential conservator, someone who is capable of taking possession immediately upon the court appointment, of maintaining, safeguarding, and insuring the building, and of completing the rehab or demolition of the property. Now, this team has to gather evidence. And what evidence they're going to be showing is, does the property meet requirements for conservatorship? Is there a realistic plan to save the property? And how do we identify the sources of funding for that court appointment conservator?
Does anybody own it, Murph?
Well, here comes the problem. Finding an attorney is fairly easy. Finding the owner is fairly easy because we have the deed,
right?
Yeah, the BRT and the deeds list everything out. Now, there are certain ineligible properties. Let's talk about those first. We'll get rid of the exemptions, and then we'll talk about a property that's been listed for sale within the past 60 days. That means the owner is trying to sell it because he can no longer maintain it. It is owned or regulated by public housing. Can't sue the PHA.
Right.
Philadelphia Housing Authority. It's occupied by someone other than a squatter or has not been vacant for at least 12 months. Because we talked about squatters and crimes and so forth. Has been owned by the current owner for less than 6 months. Is in foreclosure. Or is owned by someone who is absent from the property on active military duty. And you can see why those exemptions make sense. But what happens if the property is owned by someone for more than 6 months and they cannot afford to take care of it? Well, they're not part of the exemption. So that means technically a person who is residing in a property, no matter how substandard or many, how many code violations are in there, and it's owned, that may fall into this conservatorship. Now, the complications with the conservatorship is, suppose the property is owned by the Commonwealth or by municipal government. What do you think happens there?
No idea.
If you file for a conservatorship of a government-owned property, the chances of you obtaining a conservator over a government property is very slim. Again, and what about this? A property that's subject to drug forfeiture. You know about the Drug Forfeiture Act. Governments are allowed to
seize the property?
Correct. If there is illicit drugs or activity.
Now, a government-owned property, like it's, let's just say we're in a blighted area, okay, and these are row homes. These, you know, it's not a business for anything. It's not a business building. It's not a former, you know, hospital or some kind of building that used to have a commercial, like a hotel that's beat up.
Sure.
But it's a regular row home. Could that be owned by the government?
Yes. And in fact, let's talk about that. Properties that are owned, let's see, we're talking about the Department of Public Property, Philadelphia Housing Development Corporation, Philadelphia Redevelopment Authority, and the Philadelphia Housing Authority. Now, pardon me, we all have seen, you know, various news clippings about the conditions in certain Philadelphia-owned housing authority, whether it was done through by the residents by intentionally or wantonly destroying property. There seems to be a problem with their general repair. There's always plumbing, electrical, locks, safety issues.
What about bank-owned, seized by the bank?
That's different. Well, that's foreclosure, but that's why the exemption says is occupied by someone other than a squatter or has not been vacant for at least 12 months, and it has been owned by the current owner for less than 6 months or is in foreclosure. If it's post-foreclosure and they already have a sheriff's deed, then the new owner would be a current owner, assuming it was less than 6 months, then he would be exempt, at least for through the 12-month period. Now, these issues were very, very sensitive to me because someone who has filed for a conservatorship against an owner is seeking to cut off their ownership rights, ultimately.
Right.
Now, when you file a complaint, typically there's going to be either a government lien, an L&I violation, or owners who failed to respond to repeated notices of violation when they were taken to court, and they're no longer compliant with the Philadelphia rules. So, you can't take matters into your own hands. You say, we're going to get rid of this. This guy's just ignoring everything. You have to file a petition. Now, there are four conditions necessary, since we just segued that, for conservatorship in real estate. And this is under only Rule 135. We're not talking about real estate conservatorships that are dealing with estate matters or trust issues. This is solely for blighted and abandoned properties. Because it was in the news, and Philadelphia has more than their share, and to deal with them is a different situation. So, condition one, the property must not have been legally occupied for the previous 12 months. That means it's a constructive abandonment. All right, so let's say you own an investment property. You had a bad year, right? Property's not yet in foreclosure, but you've got a default, or you've got a series of monthly arrearages. If it's vacant, neighbors are able to provide information about when it was last occupied, and they can sign an affidavit. If utility shutoff dates are available as a matter of public record, or failure to repair L&I violations, that information is helpful as well. A squatter-occupied property, even though we talked about potential squatters' rights in a previous, not considered legally occupied under this act. It's got to be the registered owner or a designated tenant. That's number one. You ready for number two?
I'm ready.
This is glazed eye time, Joe.
Well, I'm looking and I'm going, so if there's a squatter in there, it may not legally be recognized as occupied, but if somebody applies for a conservatorship for that property, that may be a little wrench in somebody's decision to do so, right? Because the squatter still has their squatter's rights, correct? Like, how would they get rid of them?
Well, the squatter's rights can be overridden by the judicial petition. That's why Rule 135 requires a legal intervention. And that's why I said you don't take matters into your own hands. The squatter can be physically removed if the property becomes eligible for 135, because 135, like we said, we have that team. So you're going to bring in the project manager, you're going to bring in the lawyer, you're going to bring in the architect, and they're going to retrofit the property so that it's up to code. And then it can actively be sold. Now, there's another exemption that if the property was not actively marketed for sale during 60 days before the date of the petition, then it can be sold, a conservatorship. But that requires, 2 months of inactivity.
Let me ask you a question, Brev. Who are typically the types of individuals that apply for these conservatorships?
Oh, well, and that is what concerns me about the potential abuse.
Okay.
Wholesale wildcat investors, vacant property for purchase, and that's why we have these protections in there. Joe, if you're an individual investor and you're approved by the court, you can do it. How about the fact that what about the abuse of this? A potential conservator can do his homework, get the information about whether the property was abandoned, get the information whether the property is in violation of codes, get the information of whether it's a public nuisance, sign a petition, get an affidavit. The owner, who barely has enough money to survive and can't even fix his property, is left to the courts pro se.
It's interesting. Talking about it, I'm thinking about, for example, let's go to a blighted neighborhood where you might not just have one home, but you may have
a block,
an entire block. I find it hard to believe that a conservator or somebody is just going to apply for one of those houses. You know, if you're going to get one, you're going to want to buy the whole block.
Well, that's an interesting that has happened where you can buy in block, but the good news is the property is in need of, quote, substantial rehabilitation, and has had no rehab activity over the previous 12 months. But here's the rub. Under the Act, the cost of the repair, replacement, and improvement exceeds 15% of the property's value after rehabilitation. So you have a shell that's worth $150,000, but after the rehabilitation, it'll be worth $250,000. Then $250,000 would be $45,000. So if the renovation is less than $45,000, just using that example, you can't use this act.
Wait a minute, one more time. Hold on. Let me do that. Could you repeat those numbers real quick?
All right. Let's say the property's worth $150,000 before the rehabilitation.
Okay.
Let's say the rehabilitation cost $45,000 and it now has a conservative value of $250,000.
Right.
Right? Because you've improved
it. Right, you've improved it.
That $45,000 is less than 15%. So that property would not be considered substantial renovation. It has to be. That's why the architect and the appraiser are very important.
So repeat that. It has to be. So $45,000.
The property has to. The repair, replacement, and improvement of the property has to exceed 15% of the property's value after the replacement, improvement, or repair.
Okay.
So that would be an estimate, right? I'm sure we've all seen those home shows on HGTV where, you know, they say we're going to invest $80,000, it'll be worth another $130,000 after.
So if you put $45,000 in, $45,000 has to exceed 15% of what the value is afterwards.
Right. If the property is only worth $200,000 after that $45,000, that means it doesn't qualify because $200,000 is only $30,000. So $45,000 would exceed 15%, and that would make it eligible for conservatorship.
Okay.
And
what's the purpose of that?
It's a number that they wanted in order to have the property give the owner an opportunity of trying to save his fair market value, if he has any. So if it takes place in the last 12 months, you have to take photographs. There has to be evidence presented to the court. It's you can't just walk in and say, well, Your Honor, it has to have some thing, and it also has to be unfit for human habitation. So even if the owner is occupying, but let's say the stove doesn't work or there's no electricity, so there's no...
It's not up to code.
Right. Violation notices by L&I can be used as evidence of the condition.
So somebody could actually walk into a neighborhood, look around, see what houses are not up to code, and apply for a conservatorship, in order to take that house over, in spite of the fact that it may be owned by somebody who just can't afford it anymore. And as a result of that situation, and they, and I guess to me what that says is, even though you own your own home, you're still required to keep it up to code, or you could lose it.
Well, the problem is, if the property is going to be condemned or is subject to condemnation or serious rehab, it's probably a good idea, because you're talking about you're talking about other issues, other legal issues. Suppose the building's an attractive nuisance for children.
Yeah.
Kid walks in there and falls through the floorboards. That has a terrible price. And since this is an uninsured building, who's responsible for secondary liability of abandoned properties?
Well, it's
the city of Philadelphia.
Right. And it's also interesting. Imagine that house is in the middle of a block and it's a danger to the houses around it.
Right. So that brings up the other thing. If the building is subject to unauthorized entry leading to potential health and safety hazards, we got to do something about it. Or the condition and the vacancy of the building increases the risk of fire, vermin, or other things that a reasonable neighborhood would not
tolerate.
Yes. So a lot of times, homeowners, you know, the local homeowners groups will become part of the equation.
So somebody could actually have a mortgage on a property, okay? Let's take a scenario, okay? Does it have to be in a specific zone, Murph? In other words, you mentioned some of the blighted neighborhoods, but let's...
The conservator doesn't own the property outright. What the power of the conservator says is they take possession upon appointment and maintain, safeguard, and insure the property. So if there is, unless there's a foreclosure.
Who owns the building, though?
The building would ultimately be, could be owned by the bank. Now, here's the thing. A lot of banks will enter into conservatorships here. So the conservator power is to take possession and control of the building, and including any bank or operating accounts for the building. So if there isn't any, or if it's a tenant, a rental, they can collect the rents. They can pursue claims or causes of action of the owner or in the owner's stead in respect to the building and other property subject to the conservatorship. They can contract for repair and maintenance of the building. And it requires three bids, at least, minimum. Borrow money and obtain credit for the rehab of the property, contract and pay for the maintenance and restoration of the building. Now, they can also purchase materials, goods, and supplies to accomplish the court's order. And they can enter into new rental contracts and leases for a period not to exceed 1 year if it's a lease property. They can pay legal, accounting, and appraisal services. They can apply for and receive grants or loans to rehab it. They can sell the building and exercise all authority that an owner of the building would have to improve, maintain, and otherwise manage the building. And that's the catch-all provision, which makes me a little nervous. I don't like catch-alls, but, you know, and that means to handle any unanticipated problems which may arise through the conservatorship from being implemented. And that also has a potential negative connotation. How about this? Choosing a conservator. When you file a petition in court, you identify a party, right? Recommending to be appointed as conservator. The court makes the final decision whether to appoint that person. They require that the petitioner first approach the senior lien holder to determine the party's interest in being appointed conservator. Senior lien holder could be anybody from believe it or not, from the government, because they could have huge tax liens and they're primary, or there can be a bank. And a review of the title report is going to be a factor in the conservatorship. And we've talked about title reports before. They show up all the potential liens, judgments, and creditors. If there is no lien holder, or the senior lien holder says, no, we don't want to bother with the conservatorship, they will consider other nonprofit organizations for and recommendations. Now, we talked about them taking control of the property. There's four other factors. And this is unbelievable. I mean, think about it. Condition of the building. We talked about that. The cost of the rehab. We've talked about that. Anticipated final use of the property. Let's say it's a blighted commercial building.
Okay.
That's burned out. Somebody bought it, and they're holding it because they think there's going to be another real estate boom. And in the course of the boom, they don't have the money to develop it themselves. So they figure I'll sit on it for as long as possible. The fourth factor is then availability of financing to complete the activity. If you don't have the money to do it, you're not going to be able
to. You have to show financials in the process?
Absolutely. You have to be. Obviously. There's no incentive for the court to give a conservator.
Someone who can't afford
who's financially vicarious to replace another owner or title holder that's financially insolvent or is unable to or unwilling to pay for an improvement of the property. So they have to come up with a plan. The conservatorship requires a plan. All right. And that's a site plan, photographs, inspection report, structural assessment, everything that you would do in an inspection of a property that did not have violations. And present that to the court for their review.
By the way, what court are we talking about?
Common Pleas.
Okay.
In Philadelphia, it's the Court of Common Pleas. And anybody may be considered a party in interest, anywhere from the lien holder or a second secured creditor, because sometimes there's also a home equity loan, a resident or business owner within 500 feet of the building. So.
Interesting.
Yeah. A non-profit corporation or a municipality or school district in which the building is located, because they get more resources if there is more tax revenue received. Now, the petition is going to require a sworn statement by the petitioner that the property meets the statutory guidelines we already talked about. You have the documentation, the photographs, the title report, the appraiser, everything. A recommendation identifying a potential conservator, which I consider investor, and a preliminary plan. Now, you have to file a notification of a pending court action. That's called a LIS pendens. That means there's a pending lien with the recorder of deeds to notify anyone reviewing public records that there's pending litigation on this property that will prevent the owner from trying to sell his way out of the conservatorship, or at least ensure that anyone buying the property knows that they are buying it subject to the existing conservatorship. I know.
To me, when I think, by the way, a lot of it makes sense, you know, especially when you talk about the individuals who have a vested interest. And you know, in A, seeking these conservatorships, and B, right. You know, if you're a township, if you're a school district, if you're a neighbor who lives within 500 feet,
yes.
I mean, you know, it makes sense.
Well, before we go to break, I want to touch on that because you just touched upon something that. So, okay, we have the petition we filed. Let's talk about the participation of the court hearing, and that'll be a good time to
sure.
For a message. The Act requires that a hearing be held within 120 days, which is good. A lot of times they get continued because there's service issues or whatever, but a decision has to be rendered no later than 30 days after the hearing. Courts don't want these to be clogged up. If no objection to the petition arises at the hearing...
Who would object?
The owner or a lien holder or someone with an interest in the property.
Okay.
The court may appoint a conservator immediately and authorize them to take physical possession of the property at once. Such action enables the conservator to begin drafting a final plan. If the property owner appears in court and states that the, quote, violations or nuisance or emergency condition will be abated in a reasonable period, the court may decide to grant the owner conditional relief and prevent the conservatorship from proceeding.
Okay.
If that happens, the owner is required to post a bond. Most people don't have the bond. And if the property is not rehabilitated within the period, the court will order the conservator to proceed. But they give the owner an opportunity. But from a realistic standpoint, if you're already underwater, you can't afford counsel. You're going to go in pro se. You're not going to be able to post a bond. So what happens is sometimes other investors or potential investors that were not appointed by the court as the potential conservator will talk to the owner and become the straw party for the owner, which is not illegal, and say, listen, we'll put the money up for the bond. We'll help you rehabilitate it. We'll sell it, and we'll throw you a bone once we sell the property.
Very interesting.
And that helps the owner from, shall we say, potentially losing all of or any potential remaining equity.
It seems to me that...
But it doesn't happen that often because a lot of times these owners...
The reason the place got in that situation, you know,
there's
the
reasons,
place.
Yes. And that's my problem with the act. And especially in a place like Philadelphia where... Everything from North Philly to West Philly is blowing up again. I mean, shells used to cost $50,000 are going for over $200,000.
Okay.
And there's a lot of activity. And I think it's a potential for abuse, and we have to be mindful of people's ownership rights.
Well, having said that, okay, we're going to take a quick break, okay? But would it be okay if I talked about gentrification if I pose that question to you? Because it seems to me that, you know, that is, you know, you have a lot of savvy investors, real estate people. And, of course, going into neighborhoods. Now, you're not going to go right in the middle of, of the Badlands, probably. But at the same time, there's fringe blocks and all kinds of things. And that's kind of probably how it happened. So,
well, that's what we're going to talk about because we're going to go to break right now. But we're going to say this. Act 35 requires the conservator to submit a, quote, final plan.
Awesome. All right. We're going to have more from Merv Haber's Real Estate Power Hour in just a minute.
Who's Merv Haber? I'm glad you asked. The host of Talk Radio's hottest new real estate show, Merv Haber's Real Estate Power Hour on WWDB Talk 860. Whether it's representation for a sale or purchase of a property, or consultation, preparation, or review of documents, real estate attorney Merv Haber of Haber DePaul LLC has the experience and expertise needed to get the deal done right. And if it's a track record for success in commercial litigation matters or pursuit of defense of property disputes, Merv Haber of Haber DePaul LLC is your choice to handle and represent all of your real estate and real property needs. For your residential and commercial real estate and real property needs, contact Merv Haber of Haber DePaul LLC, 215-985-1515 or 856-722-0303 or at haberdepaul.com. And do yourself a favor, call Haber and get the deal done right. Meet Merv Haber of Haber DePaul LLC, host of Merv Haber's Real Estate Power Hour, a one-hour monthly broadcast on WWDB Talk 860 that features the region's premier residential and commercial real estate and real property experts and professionals. From the top real estate brokers, appraisers, and builders to highest profile mortgage brokers and professionals, Merv Haber's Real Estate Power Hour has them all. Tune in to WWDB Talk 860 or listen online at WWDBAM.com and experience real estate like you never have before. We'll see you on the radio.
All right, well, welcome back to Merv Haber's Real Estate Power Hour here on WWDB Talk 860. The conversation is about Act 135. Not sure about it? Think you've never heard about it? Well, Merv Haber is Philadelphia's premier real estate attorney, and the education we're getting right now will bring a lot of things to light that you see every day, but you may not even realize. Merv, pick it up from there, my friend.
All right. Thank you very much. And what I want to make sure our readers understand is that not all these properties are owned personally. Some of them are owned by investors who are holding on to them as a future investment. So what happens is the act in some analysis has shown us the following. And the data suggests that Act 135 petitions are disproportionately filed in communities vulnerable to gentrification as measured by the reinvestment fund's displacement risk ratio. So approximately 27% of addresses subject to Act 135 petition come down to a census block that the reinvestment fund denotes as an elevated risk for displacement.
I would think it would be even higher.
Well, the trends can be exacerbated because this act was filed in 2008, and I would suggest to you that the first 7 to 10 years, nothing was going on. Very few cases were filed, but then there was an uptick, and the trends are exacerbated by rapid home value appreciation throughout Philadelphia. That's what I was saying. Even shells are worth a lot of money. So large investors are increasingly purchasing single-family or townhomes in Philadelphia to convert into apartments, which in the long term create more of a transient population in certain areas.
I agree with that.
And it may affect residents' ability to build intergenerational wealth through and home ownership rates. So,
but don't they have to go through zoning? Okay, like when you,
of course,
when you think about, and even it, like in the Roxburgh section of Philadelphia, there are apartment complexes going up constantly. Okay, and maybe the homes or commercial buildings were knocked over, demolished and replaced with them. I agree with that, the transient situation, but what's confusing to me is that the community is approving those situations.
And well, here's what happens. Fishtown and Kensington, some of these areas that were previously lower income and were ignored by investors are starting to heat up. So, and you see block to block, you've got a burned out block or a vacant lot building. Then you have a completely gentrified block.
Well, it's funny you mention it because
and that's why we're doing block groups. That's how they do the analysis.
Well, you have, the neighborhoods, and I'll tell you, this is an education because I live in East Falls, mm-hmm. right next to Manayunk. Manayunk, as you and I both know, 40 years ago, maybe 45, was a dilapidated entire neighborhood.
Was somewhat blighted, yes.
Somewhat. It's completely rehabilitated, like literally gentrification, incredible. But my neighborhood is a little different. You have some blocks that are bad, and most of the area that's decent.
Right.
And you mentioned Northern Liberties or Fishtown and Northern Liberties area. They were dilapidated, obviously Kensington, but now they're rehabilitated. So it's the gentrification and all that. I imagine a lot of this is going on at least.
Yes, and the displacement risk ratio of 33% is a lot of these properties were bought on speculation, future investment. Most of the owners can avoid conservatorship by simply saying, Your Honor, we'll put the $50,000 in. We were holding this property for a while. We purchased it in 1982. It was never an issue, but now that there's a gentrification going on, we'll give us 6 months and we'll rehabilitate
right.
it, and you will not need any further court intervention.
So
suppose you are an individual, and this is a colorblind or racially blind statute. So it doesn't matter if it's poor, white, black, or other minority. The bottom line is, if you are an owner and you cannot afford to rehabilitate it, your property can be taken away. And in fact, the advocacy for racial and civil justice said that a lot of people become displaced. You know, ultimately, as a respondent, which is the defendant in an Act 135 petition, there results in the loss of the property because they have no ability to either fight the case or show up and are not properly shepherded, or feel that they shouldn't lose their property regardless. And there's no monetary compensation if the conservatorship goes to the end.
But like you said, it's a number of these places might be owned by big developers, and they're just letting them sit there until you know, things change. And in the process, you know, they get called on it.
Right. And their Representative John Taylor, who introduced certain amendments in 2014, and he argued that if you make conservatorship a more attractive tool, on one hand, that's good. But on the other hand, private developers could be incentivized to use conservatorship by encouraging the payment of cost and developer fees, shortening the time frame for ultimate possession. So they expanded who's a party in interest. If you are a resident or a business owner of the blighted property, you can file a petition within 2,000 feet. That's a third of a mile. That's over a quarter mile from the property itself. I guess the real issue is, if we are careful and responsible in the use of 135, then it probably is a worthwhile program, particularly since Philadelphia is trying to raise its poverty standard or a higher standard of living. I have no problem with that. But on the other hand, it is up to the courts as the gatekeepers to prevent that kind of abuse. And I wish our readers could see this. I pulled up a graph of where a lot of the activity is, and it's mostly in underserved
communities,
because the other areas have already gentrified. There's been no conservatorship filed in, let's say, Rittenhouse Square or Society Hill. But, you know, areas around south of Washington Street, in South Philly, or north of
lighted sections,
right, north of Spring Garden and west of 54th Street, all of those places have been subject to increased Act 135 activity. So as we wind this down, and I have to say, I know we're talking about advanced concepts, but if our listeners just simply understand, and if they are in a, I guess, blighted or a stressful condition, that they need to understand at least the basis of the law.
Well, I can tell you this. It is... It brings to light a lot of issues, okay? And certainly to me, you know, and you mentioned that, you know, we were going to touch on gentrification a little bit in the process. And to me, when I first heard about that, Merv, I was confused why anybody in the world would be against gentrification. But it does displace...
Right, and that's what this report was saying. It says... That so I urge law and policymakers to consider other strategies and tools to ensure that Act 135 respondents who are vulnerable homeowners have access to pro bono legal representation and to resources to repair, restore, and renew their property. The last thing we need is a mini pandemic of homelessness based upon this rush to file petitions.
Yes.
The other thing is... There are a few judges in the Philadelphia Court of Common Pleas that have actually been excellent gatekeepers. I'm not going to mention them by name, obviously, but some of the judges have made information, and I'm paraphrasing here, Make information and potential resources available to Act 135 petition respondents. But we need greater outreach and public education, state and municipal incentives, because the state created the act. This is not a Philadelphia act. This is statewide. So the PA Department of Community and Economic Development Whole Home Repairs Program could offer vulnerable homeowners who desire to maintain ownership of their property needed support prior to facing an Act 135 petition. I also think that there should be legal aid or pro bono legal representation and resources. If you are a tenant who is looking at a landlord-tenant eviction, there is an attorney in-house at the municipal court to help you deal with that. Conversely, a stressed homeowner who may be living in a blighted property, where do we put that individual if he or she or them are displaced?
What happens, Murph, if somebody goes to court? How about this scenario? Okay, somebody applies for a conservatorship.
Okay.
Okay, you have somebody who's fallen on hard times. Okay, and they have... You know, and maybe they're doing the best that they can, but it's just not working out. Maybe they're sick, okay, and they kind of plead to the court their scenario. Does the court typically have sensitivity towards situations like that?
Well, believe it or not, an owner may petition for a conservatorship when there is a co-owner who is absent or refuses to agree to some of the repairs. An owner can respond to the court petition to appoint a conservator, and the judge will set a deadline for the owner to abate the conditions, they can. The conservatorship does not relieve the owner of any liability or responsibilities. That's the rub. And the owner may petition to terminate the conservatorship, but the owner is required to reimburse the conservator. So if the conservator spends $10,000 on legal fees, zoning, and another $40,000 on rehab, we're talking an owner who's already maybe stressed has to come up with, in my example, up to $60,000.
Right.
And the owner, just so you know, is last on the list of distribution of proceeds. So let's say they do rehab this property, and the conservator wants to sell it. He can do so.
Creditors get paid off.
Creditors go first.
Yep.
Then it's the conservator. And then, if there's anything left over, is the owner. And that's why the study for the civil rights study showed that many owners that are facing this type of daunting legal proceeding usually cannot redeem the property to be free and clear again. On its face, it will do a good job. Over time, Philadelphia's housing stock will rise. You know, the old story of rising tide raises all the boats.
Right.
But in the meantime, and regardless of your political affiliation, people are being displaced and they're being hurt. And I think they should be aware of this. Now, unfortunately, our firm does perform certain pro bono services on an annualized basis, but we can't help everyone. So we pick a few cases here. These cases are very paper intensive. They have to, you know, evidentiary wise, and so forth. So when you file a petition, the respondent has to be served, or you have to at least show that you have substituted service. We're not going to go into the legal mumbo-jumbo, but there are certain rights that they have. And the thing is, the conservators generally follow the court rules, and courts, given the circumstances, will say, all right, we're going to grant the conservatorship, but if there's a part of the property that this individual can still live in while seeking other other combinations, as long as L&I goes along with it's not a complete condemnation or it's not completely destroyed, you may be able to hold on to the property for a bit longer.
Are there a list of condemned properties that, in other words, how does somebody find out about properties like this?
Well, there are sheriff sales and orders for cases all the time in the Legal Intelligencer, which is generally found online. Those are public records, and you can obtain those. So I understand the General Assembly's incentive to have safe neighborhoods and prevent vermin. And, you know, certain other municipalities, big cities, don't have that. How about that recent minor outbreak of dengue fever in Los Angeles because of their endemic homeless problem? I think Pennsylvania and Philadelphia in particular want to address those issues.
I mean, Merv, it's certainly a really interesting topic. You know, I think that educating the general public, to what's going on and to these types of issues, really, in a lot of ways, opens up people's eyes, okay, and to what's going on. Of course, savvy real estate developers and individuals that know the market are on top of those things. However, it's also good for people that, you know, may be in a hardship situation to understand what their legal rights are and what the potential is. Let's do this. We have about a minute left.
All right.
Before we announce your contact information, anything else before we roll?
Right. As I said, all the obligations, the liens have to be paid, the cost and expenses of the sale, the principal and interest of any borrowing monies that were made to invest in the property, the cost of the rehabilitation, the unpaid obligations of the conservator, liens and security interests of third parties. And then, if there's anything left, the owner gets the proceeds.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, our conversation is about Act 135. Okay, soup to nuts. I personally, could go on another hour, 2 hours on this topic alone because I think that, like I said, it just opens up so many eyes and it impacts a lot of people's lives and that we talk. It also impacts gentrification, which to me is an incredibly interesting area. Merv, contact information?
Sure. You can contact us in Pennsylvania at 215-985-1515 or in New Jersey, 856-722-0303. If you have any questions regarding this, you may contact me at mhaber@haberdepaul.com. And we appreciate Joe and the station for allowing us to bring this information to the public.
We appreciate you bringing it to the public. Certainly, these are conversations that not enough people hear about. And another fantastic show. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to Merv Haber's Real Estate Power Hour here on WWDB Talk 860. The website also, you can Google Haber DePaul also to get in touch with Merv. On behalf of our host, Merv Haber, I'm Joe Dougherty. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Meet Merv Haber of Haber DePaul LLC, host of Merv Haber's Real Estate Power Hour, a one-hour monthly broadcast on WWDB Talk 860 that features the region's premier residential and commercial real estate and real property experts and professionals. From the top real estate brokers, appraisers, and builders to highest profile mortgage brokers and professionals, Merv Haber's Real Estate Power Hour has them all. Tune in to WWDB Talk 860 or listen online at WWDBAM.com and experience real estate like you never have before. We'll see you on the radio. Who's Merv Haber? I'm glad you asked. The host of Talk Radio's hottest new real estate show, Merv Haber's Real Estate Power Hour on WWDB Talk 860. Whether it's representation for a sale or purchase of a property, or consultation, preparation, or review of documents, real estate attorney Merv Haber of Haber DePaul LLC has the experience and expertise needed to get the deal done right. And if it's a track record for success in commercial litigation matters or pursuit of defense of property disputes, Merv Haber of Haber DePaul LLC is your choice to handle and represent all of your real estate and real property needs. For your residential and commercial real estate and real property needs, contact Merv Haber of Haber DePaul LLC, 215-985-1515 or 856-722-0303 or at haberdepaul.com. And do yourself a favor, call Haber and get the deal done right.